Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world.
Hello, everyone. My name is Diego Alfonso, and I'm the host of the Florida Aviation Network, broadcasting live and in the clear from the Howard Hughes exhibit in the Florida Air Museum, located on the Sun and Fun Campgrounds at the Lakeland Linder Airport in sunny Lakeland, Florida. As you know, as a host, my job is to interview aviation personalities and aviation enthusiasts. Today, we have here on the studio a couple that represent an insurance company, an aviation insurance company. Once I say the name, whether you're a renter or a pilot, you're going to recognize that name because they've been around for a long, long, long time producing good services. I have here Marcy Veroni. Hi, Marcy.
Hi.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
And here I have Mike Adams. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And I believe that there's a little bit of exciting things happening in Avanco as we talk right now. Would you like to give us a little bit of information about where is Avanco going and what is happening right now?
Well, I certainly will. But one of the things that Avemco is working on, and actually this is the one of our stops on our 2013 educational tour, and what we've decided to do as an insurance company, we have an obligation to protect our policyholders, of course, and insure pilots and airplane owners. But we started digging into our claims history and have determined that we've got some information that would be helpful to increase the safety for all of the pilots and plane operators. So we've put together a tour. Marcy's made two forum presentations here. We'll be at Oshkosh, we'll be in New Hampshire, talking about what we've found so that as pilots and plane owners can look through some traits and say, I've got this trait, I don't have this trait, here's something I need to work on. Oh, here's some information that you can't get from the NTSB records or the FAA records. The thing that's interesting about when you start to analyze claims and look for trends and personality traits and things, we get an awful lot of information in our claims files that isn't available elsewhere. Now, to protect our customers, we wash all of this information, so no one needs to worry about, are we out telling stories out of school about customers and things? We're not. We wash everything so it's generic, and then we come up with, here are the trends that we see and what we need to take a look at, or what someone should work on to be a safer pilot.
Okay. What really piqued my interest, and I'm going to address Marcy now.
Sure.
Is this the Safety Education Tour.
Yes.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, we want airplanes to insure, and we want pilots to insure. And as Mike alluded to, we have a lot of data because we not only sell the policy, but we adjust the claims. So we have all of this claims data that we can share with the different types of owners. In the fall, Mike was in Palm Springs, and he talked to the American Bonanza Society about what we see with Bonanzas. One of our coworkers talked to the Comanche Society about what we see with Comanches. And we also can split it based on the ratings of somebody or how much time they have or what part of the country that they're from. And it's data that we want to share so that we can educate our consumers so that we have pilots to insure and airplanes to insure.
You know, that is a terrific idea. I really didn't know that.
Yes.
Because you're obtaining information right from a specific source that could be a address. In other words, you can address that group specifically.
You bet.
And so it's like a specialized mechanic.
And you know what else, Diego? It's stuff that you don't find on the NTSB. You know, it's things that we get that aren't reported to, you know, NTSB, something you might see out in the press.
Right.
So it's we want to share it because we want to keep everybody flying.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned the Bonanza Society because I was a flight instructor for the Bonanza Society for many, many, many years, and they do a terrific job.
Great.
Really, really good.
We agree.
Now, Mike, I understand that there's going to be some presentations, actually two safety focus forums. One is called Traits of Superior Pilots, and the other one is Unique Safety Perspective. And I imagine this tie-ins to what Marcy was saying. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yes, but what we do in the two forums, I'm going to address the traits of a superior pilot first, is Avemco was a charter sponsor of ARRI, the Airmen's Education Research Initiative. And what we came up with is Dr. Bill Rhodes, the lead researcher, approached us because we were being frustrated by the mind-numbing consistency of the claims that we were seeing, primarily when I was sitting in on our Friday morning claims review meetings. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Rhodes came up with this program, and we helped fund it to take a look at what's the difference in pilots between those that have had a loss and those that haven't. Now, he put together an experimental model, ran some test groups and things on it, and we came up with some rather interesting trends of traits of someone that is going to be a good aviator or professional airmanship versus an individual that maybe has a trend or a trait that is going to lead towards, we see these with someone that has an accident.
Yeah.
It's an exciting study. There are about 10 traits. We go through them in the seminar and expand a little bit on them. The thing that's really kind of interesting, one of the traits is that a safe pilot is someone that's humble, has humility. And unfortunately, or fortunately, they assign that topic to me. And I take that as a subtle thing from my coworkers. but the thing that's kind of fascinating about it is they put me in a simulator. In fact, they put a lot of our example cases into a sim and build three different scenarios, and they subtly change each scenario a little bit. I survived two out of the three. I didn't live through the third one. And the thing that came out of it was that good pilots know what to do. Great pilots do it. Those of us that get killed or have an accident, we know what to do, and for some reason, we don't do it. We make the wrong decision. And so that's what Dr. Rhodes was working on. We came up with several other traits that pilots will have, and that's what we do present to tell people. Now, it's not if you do these things, you'll never have an accident, but these are things you need to be aware of and work on. To move into the unique findings, what we did with that, now, Avemco's been around for 50-plus years, so we went back into our claims records and said, okay, where are we seeing claims and what's causing them or where are they coming in? Now, the NTSB does a great job on fatalities, and we do want to eliminate fatalities or decrease that, but as an insurance company in aviation, we also want to cut down on all losses. And so when we went back into our data and we present this unique perspective, it opens a lot of pilots' eyes that, oh, I have, you know, the weather-related claims are a certain percentage. You'd be surprised how many taxi claims an insurance company pays in a year. And you think, well, taxi, that's going to be a student pilot or someone that's not experienced. I've got to tell you, we've got 500-hour-plus pilots, 500 hours in make and model, that are taxiing into poles, into hangars, off of taxiways, all kinds of things. So if we can point this out, someone will say, oh, okay, I've got to stop programming my GPS. I've got to stop jotting down my clearance when I'm taxiing. When I'm moving in an airplane, I need to have my head on the swivel, so to speak, and pay attention to taxiing and do the other things at a different time.
You bet.
So that's what we are doing with the educational tour. And we're unique in that we've got this information. We deal direct with the customer. Our claims adjusters get it direct from the source of the accident, again, the customer and the pilot. So we are in a unique position to present this information to the aviation public.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned runway incursions and taxiway incursions because I'm a former FAA inspector. Mm-hmm. I retired last July. During my time in the FAA, I investigated approximately about 16, 17 runway incursions.
All right.
The interesting thing is that about 14 of them happened at their home airport.
Okay.
Complacency.
Where they're more... Yeah. You know, and that really got me thinking. And whenever, I do check rides. I'm still a pilot examiner.
All right, good.
And when we go into the runway incursion task during the test, I make sure that I bring that up. And then at the end of the check ride, I always tell them that because it is where you feel most comfortable.
Yes.
Were you most likely to have a problem?
Yes.
We see it.
Oh, yes, all
and,
the time.
And probably, you probably have some data to back that up.
We do.
Yes. From the insurance. Now, one thing that really it just struck me is that I really didn't realize that Avemco, I knew Avemco was in the safety business, I mean into the insurance business, but I now I see that you're heavily into the safety side of the house.
Oh, absolutely.
You bet. Our customers are really our friends. I mean, I've been on the phones there for over 24 years, and when I come to shows like this, I run into these people, and they're like family or friends, and we hate to hear, you know, on Friday we sell somebody something, and on Tuesday there's a claim or something happens.
Right.
We want people to be safe, and we want airplanes out there flying. So
well,
we can
I can tell.
Them.
I mean, it's just... And according to my notes, I see that you support heavily nonprofit safety seminars and the Fast Team Wings program.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Fast Team, we have, through this program that Mike's been talking about, we keep thinking, you know, what can we do to encourage people to train? Because we have found that people that continuously train, regardless if they have 1,800 hours or 8 hours, or 80 hours, but people that continuously train have better loss records. So we've teamed up with the FAA. The WINGS program is online. And once you pass certain thresholds, you obtain different gifts. And one of the gifts is a WINGS pin. And we provide the WINGS pin for the FAA safety program.
That's great.
Yeah.
I remember the days that FAA used to do that. We had like 20 different WINGS, and then they came down to it. And it was kind of a motivator, you know.
It is.
To see people with their caps, you know, full of pins, you know, to the 20th phase. So that is something that is really good, and I'm really glad that that is coming back. Now, on the Fast Team side of the house, because, you know, I've been involved with the Fast Team for many years. So you directly, when you go and do these shows, actually the seminar, or you provide the information?
What we do is when somebody calls, I talk to them about their training. What kind of training do you do? We reward people that go out and get new ratings, take dual flight instruction, and then we strongly encourage that they go out and do something else. And a lot of times they'll say, well, you know, what's available? Well, do you know the FAA WINGS program is now online? Oh, I didn't. Well, this is where you need to go. Let me help walk you through this. And then the next thing you know, I see them in a show, and they're showing me their basic WINGS pin. So, you know, we've done our
Been
job there.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. Yes.
And that is a great thing. I'm right now, I'm, as I mentioned before, doing a series of videos myself. And one of the things that I'm addressing is the fact that I think one of the problems with pilots is that the first mechanical vehicle that we have control of is the bicycle.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And
it's a big biker.
But you don't need to know too much about that.
That is
and
correct.
I think that sets a precedent. In other words, we really don't need to know too much to ride a bike. We can just get on up and go.
Right.
Then we go to the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then the car, what do? We go to the motor vehicle and says, can you give me the book, please?
Mm.
And then they read the things and they practice that. And then once they get the driver's license, that book is never looked at again. And if you stop any driver right now and you ask him what a double yellow line means, you get that deer in the in the headlights to look. And I think that's kind of making its way to aviation. In other words, we fly, we get our ratings, and we don't practice anymore.
Yeah.
That's a good, valid observation. And one of the reasons why our support of the Fast Wings program and a promotion of ongoing continuous training, we believe it to the point, and our data has pointed out and supported to us, that when we can actually give a premium credit to our customers that do participate in an annual knowledge course and do some annual flight training every year over and above the biannual flight review. And the thing that is interesting is the number of comments when we first kicked this off, and we've been promoting this annual flight training program for about 5 or 6 years now. And at the beginning, we got resistance that, well, I'm not going to learn anything, and this, that. And now we're getting comments about, thank you for telling this. This is great. You know, I picked up something new on it. I've got this idea over here. We've really kind of pushed a lot of our customers in the northern tier states that will come down south in the winter. They'll leave their airplane up where it's cold, and then they'll go back in the spring and start to fly again. That we've seen an improvement in the safety record when the customer goes back, gets set up with a flight instructor, gets a couple of hours of dual flight instruction after not flying for 6 months or so, and then they have a very safe flying season during the summer, maybe stop flying again in November, come back down south where it's not quite so cold, and just go through that cycle again. But once we've got pilots set that, yes, part of my routine is I'm going to fly with an instructor, and maybe it's going to be crosswind takeoffs and landings. Maybe I want to go up and get some aerobatic instruction on there that's related. We have quite a few pilots that say, you'll give me a credit if I go down and get a seaplane rating. They may never fly a seaplane again, but as you probably know from your experience, they've begin to think of another dimension. You have another avenue on it. You've got to now handle the water, judge the length of the pond or the runway, so to speak, and all of that. It just gets them thinking more, and they start to analyze the risk a little bit more and manage it. And that's really the key to our program and what we're trying to get all of our pilots to do.
And I just wanted to add that right now we have a blog. It's called Knocking Off the Rust, and it's basically about what Mike just said. You know, your airplane's been down because the weather's been bad, and now it's a sunny day. Do you want to just jump in that airplane, or do you want to call your CFI and knock off the rust? And that's part of our safety initiative. We have blogs. We have, if you can't come out to one of our presentations, we are doing webinars, podcasts, and we're trying to get all that stuff on our website to educate everyone.
Sure. I put together a little creed for pilots, and one of the items is do not allow the hinges of proficiency to rust in place.
That's a good saying.
Yeah, I like it.
That's the way. And I'll tell you, I read a quote the other day, which is anonymous. I don't know who, and I'm putting it on my website. And it says that in times of crisis, pilots really don't rise to the occasion. They default to their level of training.
Boy.
That's a truism, yes.
You know what I mean? And I really believe that.
Yes.
Because when you're up there and things get tense, what do? You go back to what you learned. That's why it's so important to learn well in the beginning and to keep that going.
Yes.
I have a question, though, because I've been involved in aviation for many times, and I mean for many years, and I've had insurance. And what's the difference between, I know Avemco is a direct insurance company. Could you explain that a little bit? Because I don't think the pilot population knows the difference.
Sure. Do you want to take that?
Sure. Yeah. Direct means we don't sell through agents. You don't call a local agent to get a quote from Avemco. You have to call us directly on our 800 number, or you can go to our website to obtain a insurance quotation. So we don't pay through agents or brokers. You have to physically call us. If you're working through an agent, they can't get a quote from Avemco.
You have
to come to us directly.
Okay.
And I'm an underwriter, so you physically talk to one of the underwriters. We have a good staff back home, long tenure. I think 17 years is the average tender. And we have conversations, and we talk and help you tailor the policy to what you need.
So thinking as a farmer, you get it from the horse's mouth.
You bet.
Absolutely.
You do.
You go right to the source. That's the deal. Mike, I want to ask you a question. And now this is more a personal type of thing, because, you know, you're in an aviation industry and everything. And what is your interest in aviation, not as insurance now, meaning as a pilot?
Well, like most people that are in aviation, airplanes fascinated me from a young age. And I started out building the traditional rubber band powered aircraft. I do have to defend the rights and bicyclists. I'm also a bicyclist, so it is easier to ride a bike than to fly a plane. And then from there, I had the opportunity to get my private pilot certificate, pick that up. And then had the chance to transition into aviation insurance. So I was an aviator pilot before I got into the aviation insurance, which for me was a perfect coupling of two real interests that I had. My experience is I've got a little over 700 hours instrument rated, single engine land, high performance complex. The majority of my flying, and a shout out to anyone out in the Pacific Northwest, was out in the Pacific Northwest. And I got to tell you, flying through Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, Oregon, Washington, the San Juan Islands is just gorgeous. Now, I love the rest of the country. I'm not, putting that down, but If anyone has a chance to fly in the Northwest, you really ought to go out and do it. So, yeah, this has been a great marriage of an avocation and a vocation for me.
Sure. And where did you exactly learn to fly?
I learned to fly at Hillsboro, Oregon. There was a Piper dealer at the time, and actually my father-in-law. Now, he got the plane after I married his daughter, so I didn't marry her for the wrong reasons. A lovely woman, yeah. Still a lovely woman. I want to get that out.
Shout out to Sue.
It was, yes. Hello, Sue. But he had a Piper Warrior, the 151, and I learned to fly initially in the Piper Tomahawk and then moved into the Warrior and the Archer, then transitioned over into the Cessna products, and that's pretty much what I've been flying. I've got some time in the Cirrus aircraft, the Diamonds, a little time in a Grumman American on there. Didn't do anything with the multi-engine other than to ride in the back of the plane like most other passengers.
Great. Now, in relationship to Jacksonville, Oregon, where are you located?
I was in the Portland, Oregon area, so I was on the west
north.
Side. Yeah, I was on the west side of the Cascades, which made the instrument rating crucial for my job, because one of the reasons the agriculture is so nice out there is it's fairly damp, which means we'd get a marine layer of clouds at about 1,000 feet. So you'd file your IFR departure, you'd hit it at 1,000, you'd be on top maybe around 4,000, then you'd be off to a VFR environment. So that's the extent of my instrument flying, is if I can get through about a 2,000-foot layer to good air on top, I'll do that. In a single-engine plane, being an insurance guy, if I'm going to be in the clouds for 3 hours, I'm going to take an airliner or drive a car.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely. I remember I have an experience. We drove, my wife and I, we went from Los Angeles all the way up to Washington State on I-5, and we came up on Mount Shasta.
Yes.
On a ride as we were going up, which is a beautiful sight. But then I came to a town called Weeds.
Yes, Weed, California. It is there. Been there many times.
And we had lunch there in a Portuguese restaurant.
Wow.
Named Da Silva was the name. Great food, and I, you know, here we're in the West Coast, and here I see this Portuguese. We made a stop, and the town's name was Weeds. So I'll never forget that. Now, Marcy.
Yes.
Do you have any background on aviation?
Most of my background is in a Redbird simulator that the company bought in conjunction with this safety tour.
Okay.
All of the underwriters, we've all been through ground school, and we've been flying some scenarios in this sim to kind of try to sit in our customers' seats, so to say. I started at Avemco. I went to school to be a paralegal, and I just started as a temporary until I could find my real job.
Yeah.
And I just found the people and the industry fascinating, and I ended up going from the ultralight department to the turbine department to we wrote commercial flight schools for a while, and the next thing you know, 26 years went by. And I love people, and I love working the show booth. So,
well, I'll tell you, you stay involved in any aviation activity, such as the one you're in. You know, with now you're involved in the safety side, and I can tell you that that bug is going to bite pretty big.
It does.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we do this again 5 years from now. You're going to say, you know, I got my private pilot license, and I'm working on my instrument now.
I need to get my budding gear.
Well, she did complete the ground school, so she's got all of the background.
Thanks,
there.
Man.
And she hasn't died in the sim yet. They've
no.
only managed to kill me.
Not yet. So,
okay, now I want to ask you a question. And, of course, you know, everybody that flies is curious. And the question has to do you recall, if you go from the cases that you have worked on or the accidents that have happened, can you elaborate, like, one of them, like where something that shouldn't happen did happen? And I know this, I don't want to blindside you because we didn't even talk about this, but if you have anything, either one of you, if you recall anything like that.
Well, not to, when I've got to protect the privacy of our clients.
Just the incident.
There have been a couple of claims that have totally surprised me, where I've been aware of the experience of the pilot, have had conversations with them, and then the next thing you know, you get the phone call that they've got to report a claim. And unfortunately, this one was pretty tragic, and it shouldn't have happened.
Okay.
And there's really no... it wasn't... You can't blame it on the pilot because the witness is gone. The weather conditions, for all intents and purposes, should have been manageable, and it was just a part of the country that was odd. I mean, that's one that really bothers me. So somewhere, when we get back to the traits of a superior pilot, there's something there that, you know, was the difference, because the airplane's inanimate. It's not going to care. So it's the human factor that we need to look at with the training.
Sure. And you know, I always say that no matter how hard we try, we can minimize it, but there's still going to be something there. I mean, there's still the human. I'll tell you, I believe, and I know this is going to sound controversial, and I've had some heated arguments. I really believe that the aviation system is near to perfection. The system. The human factor, however, it's where we have, and the human factor affects the system as a whole.
Yes.
But the system, the way things have been thought out, the way things have been, how are we going to go from point A to point B, all that has been, I really think that is near perfection, if you follow the rules.
Right.
Because here's what happened. And correct me if I'm wrong, behind every accident, we feel that some basic was violated. Unless you have a catastrophic failure of an aircraft, but the human factor is involved in almost every accident.
Yeah. I would agree with that statement.
So would I.
And the one thing that came out of the ERIE project is the military and the airlines have done an excellent job in taking care of part of the human factor of accidents. And so you look at the number of flights they have, you look at what the military is doing in their quotes high-risk activities, they have an excellent safety record. And we do need to work with our pilots and general aviation to get to that standard and level.
Okay, Marcy, do you have anything to say?
I just want to thank you for giving us this opportunity. And I guess I wanted to let everyone know that Avemco has been in business for over 50 years. We have a great rating from all the companies that rate companies based on financial stability and the way we handle our claims. And
Mike, would you like to add
just
anything
enjoy.
Else?
Just thank you for the time this morning, and everyone fly safely.
Well, unfortunately, we have gotten to that point where we're going to have to say goodbye, and because time is merciless.
Farewell.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure, Marcy.
Yep.
Mike.
Likewise.
I tell you, I'm really, my hat is off.
Thank you.
To you guys, especially on the safety side
of the
house.
Thank you very much.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.